From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from the studios of WABE in Atlanta, Georgia. This program is made possible in great part by the generous support of our listeners. They have kept this show going strong for almost 12 years, and now, really more than ever, we need you, to join them. For information on making a tax-deductible donation, please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. State of Belief airs every weekend on radio stations nationwide and is available as a podcast on iTunes and other leading podcast platforms. I urge you to subscribe to it right now. Do it right now. Now, here's what's coming up this week on State of Belief Radio.
Our Iowa community, as well as the national LGBT community, lost someone very dear to us, Donna Redwing. And Donna, you made my life better. I was 14 years old the first time somebody called me a dyke. My parents skipped award ceremonies for awards I won and did not come to my swearing-in at the Iowa State Capitol. Things have come a long way, but there is so much more work to do. And Donna, I promise you, I will keep doing it and I will empower others to do the same. In your memory, we will work for employment non-discrimination in all 50 states, healthcare equity for LGBTQ folks. We will work to end the homelessness faced by so many LGBTQ kids, particularly trans kids, equitable treatment in the justice system, and so much more. And I will remember how you engaged even those who sought to hurt you with love. We'll miss you, Donna. Thank you for standing so strong and for letting people like me stand on your shoulders.
Donna Redwing was a lifelong activist, an uncompromising LGBTQ and marriage equality advocate, and a loving friend. Donna left us this week after a valiant battle with cancer, and later in the show, we'll remember this remarkable woman and celebrate a remarkable life.
People have been saying that I stopped believing in hell.
I heard a voice say,
everyone's already saved.
No, you can't just rewrite the Bible.
I'm not rewriting anything, I'm just rereading it.
You speak the word of God in this church.
That God loves us all!
When a popular mega church pastor in Tulsa, Oklahoma, comes to believe there is no hell, what happens when he starts preaching that message? That's just part of the story of Bishop Carlton Pearson, which is told in the new Netflix documentary, Come Sunday. Later in the show, we'll bring you a conversation between Carlton and Interfaith Alliance President Rabbi Jack Moline. But first,
once upon a time, the oceans of our planet were beautifully clean. Not anymore.
8 million metric tons of plastic trash enters the sea from land every year.
First celebrated in 1970, Earth Day events are taking place this year on April 22nd in more than 193 countries. Responsible for coordinating all this across the globe is the Earth Day Network, and I'm very pleased to welcome Network President Kathleen Rogers to State of Belief Radio. Kathleen, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I know there's a specific theme for this year's Earth Day. Tell us about it, please.
Well, one of the things Earth Day Network does very well in Earth Day, of course, is we are a platform, a bully pulpit, so to speak, for issues. And this year, our members who come from, as you said, 193-plus countries, all voted to focus on plastics, single-use plastics, as well as plastics in general, because the problem has become so intense. And whether you're talking about our food, our soil, our bodies, our water, the data that's coming in and its connection to human health and disease is becoming pretty overwhelming. So plastics is up there with climate change as a major issue, and we do a really good job of amplifying that, and so we chose that as our theme for 2018. Just about every piece of plastic that has ever been created, and of course 95% of it's made from fossil fuels, is still in existence, except for the tragic consequences of incinerating it, which is really bad. But the vast majority of it, probably close to 100%, still exists, and it will continue to exist for hundreds of years. And as it breaks down, it has all sorts of issues, including acting like a little magnet, which means it absorbs or attaches other chemicals to it, which then, as we digest that and drink it in our drinking water, it becomes a problem. And in addition to that, plastic breaks down in the natural environment and mimics estrogen, the human hormone, which has impacts on the sex of species in water. It's implicated very strongly in early puberty. None of these things are good for our health or our children. I consider the United States particularly very entrepreneurial, and I know, for example, there are scientists working in their garages and labs and at government offices to find a really great substitute for plastic, one that is made out of natural products that don't harm us. Of course, that's always a trick. But I know there are discoveries happening every day. And so while we're waiting for that, I think we should focus on eliminating as much single-use plastic from our lives as we can. Mm-hmm. And that means plastic bags, bottles, straws. So there's something that we as individuals can do. On the other hand, I am sort of a proponent of making sure that governments and corporations who benefit enormously from producing and using plastic are responsible for what they're creating. So I don't put all of us on the hook individually for the problem. We've been sold a bill of goods. It's very convenient, easy, you know, profess to be sanitary. And so we just have to be both watchful of the amount of plastic that we use, and we have to support governments and corporations that are doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of them. McDonald's in London, might have been all of England, just banned plastic straws from their facility, probably in large part because the Church of England and the Queen both got involved themselves this year and banned plastics from the Buckingham Palace and other places. So there's a huge amount of movement at the local level, at the national level. There's even an international treaty that's being dusted off and examined by lots of countries to deal with the issue of plastic.
Hmm. Well, in addition to the traditional one-day observance, you're also promoting the coming week as Earth Week. Talk about that for a minute.
You know, sort of long ago, we went from Earth Day to Earth Week to Earth Season, and now people do Earth Day events year-round, and we support them. But the week after Earth Day traditionally for us has been Earth Week. And so we work both with faith-based groups. An enormous amount of work goes into K-12 schools and universities. And we create curricula. We work with organizations, international relief organizations, to promote just education in general and then some sort of civic engagement, because nobody can get it all done on Earth Day. We're lucky this year it's on a Sunday. So we have lots of faith-based groups and others that are getting into the act, as well as a billion people around the planet. But we like to keep the momentum going and focus on education for that next week. And it's been very successful for many years, and it just keeps getting bigger. So by Earth Day 2020, which is our 50th anniversary, we hope to engage at least 500 to 600 million children around the world in Climate Education Week and Earth Week that year. So we're slowly but surely making our way into every country and working with educators and seniors and everyone to just focus attention for that week to make it stick a little better than a single day.
Hmm. Kathleen, I have to tell you, the abundance of material that you present on your website for people of diverse religious traditions is absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
How did the focus on faith-inspired activists come about, and how in the world did you pull all of that together?
Well, we've been doing this a long time, and we also have created really strong bonds with faith groups around the world. And I mean around the world. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's evangelicals in the United States or the Vatican, the Pope is very fond of Earth Day, which is very nice,
mm-hmm.
As well as groups like the Sikhs in India, mm-hmm. the 24 million Sikhs worldwide that are working on ending the use of plastics in their communities and temples, et cetera. So we've built this up over many years. We have found the faith community to be not just responsive to us, but in their own right, really committed to protecting the Earth from a faith, religious, spiritual, moral point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And they're some of our best allies. I think the other thing is that we find that, you know, people love the status quo. They mm-hmm. really hate change. I count myself among those people in a lot of parts of my life. But they trust their leaders. And so having faith leaders committed to this issue and committed to the environment and protecting creation really makes a difference to all the people who are so busy with their lives they don't make this a full-time profession like I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so having faith leaders really engaged, I think, turns the hearts and minds of people in those faiths towards the greater good and also to protect their children and their families. We are a network by definition, and we count on our network partners to help us think through issues, promote issues, and to say it and do it the right way. There are just so many cultures, faiths, perspectives in the world, and right now seems to be a very difficult time to build bridges and communicate. But in the end, I think faith groups have the greatest viability, more than even, say, the environmental community. So
mm-hmm.
they are among our most prized partners, and we respect them very much for what they do and for their commitment.
Are you able to talk about how much impact the Trump administration's reversal of so many environmental policies and priorities is having, or is it too soon to tell yet?
Well, I think certainly in the areas that I'm super focused on, so energy, environment, public lands, which is the Department of the Interior, EPA, which ironically has its 50th anniversary in 2020 along with us. So we're seeing an enormous effort supported by lots of foolish companies, in my view, to roll back a lot of regulations, whether you're talking about getting out of the climate agreement or rolling back the clean power plan or toxics in our water. There are a lot of really unfortunate decisions made by people who just want to pull regulations off the books because they aren't scientists
mm-hmm.
and they don't know what they're doing. We ran the March for Science last year in Washington, D.C. and found enormous support among scientists and others to really take the time to explain the not just the health benefits, but also the economic benefits. I mean, whether you're talking about seatbelts in cars, which, by the way, car manufacturers fought for years to the tune of millions and millions of dollars back decades ago, to environmental regulations. Now, people need to understand that the world benefits financially and spurs entrepreneurism and creativity. And if you want to keep countries on top, then you have to be responsible for and incentivize that kind of entrepreneurism, because the world's going to change whether the naysayers or status quo aficionados want it to change or not. So we're headed inexorably in that direction, but I hate to see the hard work of so many people, and I mean scientists, not just environmentalists,
sure.
and community members who commented and worked on these regulations. To have them all thrown out the window seems so silly and sort of not the spirit of building a strong economic base in the United States.
Right. Kathleen, some of the people that are hearing our conversation on State of Belief will not hear it until the 22nd. For those folks who may not hear it until the day or after, tell them one thing you want them to do during Earth Week, if you would.
If you wanted to do one thing, I think above all, communicate with your elected officials that you care about the issues. I'm a firm believer in volunteerism. I'm committed to it. I make my kids get engaged in cleanups. But we really need to tell our legislators. I don't care if it's your most local legislator all the way to the White House. If you're going to do one thing on Earth Day, contact Congress and let them know that you care about this and that you see a tremendous economic benefit as well as a spiritual and health benefit to going green. And so taking that kind of civic action and step towards becoming a real citizen is probably the thing that I would advise people to do more than anything. And even though Earth Day is on a Sunday, most of these municipal governments, mayors, and others will have a recording system so you can leave a message or call during Earth Week when they're mm-hmm. all going to be there.
Kathleen Rogers is president of the Earth Day Network, coordinating events for April 22nd, then the entire week ahead in more than 193 countries around the globe. You can find plenty of excellent interreligious resources and a lot more information at earthday.org, and we'll link to that from stateofbelief.com. Kathleen, this is extremely helpful. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us on State of Belief Radio, and happy Earth Day.
Thanks for your kind words, and I appreciate it.
There's lots more still to come on this week's show. We'll hear from Bishop Carlton Pearson, whose compelling story is told in the new Netflix documentary, Come Sunday. And later, a remembrance of Donna Redwing, who passed away this week at the age of 67. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Interfaith Alliance hosted a screening of the new Netflix documentary Come Sunday in Washington, D.C. earlier this month. It's the story of Alliance board member and Oklahoma faith leader Bishop Carlton Pearson. And so here's Interfaith Alliance President Jack Moline and Bishop Carlton Pearson.
Let me ask you, first of all, Bishop, what did you learn about yourself from watching Chiwetel Ejiofor portray you on the big screen?
I think I learned that I was suddenly angry and that I was in a lot of pain that I had denied or sort of transferred to another emotion that I thought was the anointing. And I was really more annoyed with God, with religion, with people, with scripture, and with the hate that I sort of felt I needed to preach against sin and sinners. And that was bothersome to me. And I saw that in the film, and I saw the intensity that Chiwetel so eloquently portrayed me as, and I saw myself anew and felt really free.
One of the things that struck me about the film is that the characters were all portrayed with sympathy. A lot of people did things to you that were very hurtful and perceived that you were doing things that were hurtful to them. And yet the script portrayed them as full-fledged human beings with mostly the best of intentions. Is that your experience? Is that your story? Was that your insistence? How did that happen?
Well, I think with all religions, there are good intentions. They most people, religions, people, particularly the Abrahamic faith, are serving a God that must be appeased or pleased, and that God is pretty much angry and sensitive and watching and has an opinion about you and is judging you based on his opinions. And so our intention is to please that God who we're taught is love, and we believe he loves us, but we don't believe he likes us. And so we're dancing between, it's like an abusive father, and we run to our mother or Jesus, if you will, as Christians, to protect us from the angry father. And we don't really use that terminology, of course, in describing our religions, but we are a fear-based religion and faith-biased religions, and we mean well, but our meanness literally becomes meanful, mean-spirited. Okay, we mean well, and we're mean. And I saw that in the movie. I saw the people I loved, the people I served, the people I baptized, married and buried and counseled them. I realized how they could turn on you, and that nobody can hurt you or hinder you or even hate you like somebody you love or who loves you. That's the that's the conundrum that love is. It's almost like a disease that's incurable and that needs constant treatment.
You have spoken yourself and speak in the movie about radical inclusion, about loving unconditionally and loving everybody and what the implications of that are. Talk about that for a sec.
The word radical, if you do the etymology, it comes from the idea of root, fundamental love. People always say you must learn to love. You don't really learn to love. You forget to love and learn to hate. And so I saw that among people whom I knew loved me. The confusing thing about them walking away the way they did was I knew those people loved me. And how could love turn to disdain and detachment and distancing themselves? Many families go through that. It's a very painful experience. We don't understand love. There's a difference in love, though, and compassion. I noticed that many of the people who stayed had compassion, which means they related to my pain and to the pain of those I was trying to reach. Compassion, the pathos. I feel your pain. You can say you love somebody and not identify with their pain and actually leave them. And people do that all the time. Children leave their parents. Husbands and wives split. And they still love. And they die loving but not liking. And they don't feel the pain they're inflicting on each other. So what I'd like to see is a correction of that, that we start emphasizing and even using the term compassion more than we flippantly use the word love. Many churches will have a sign out there that says, all are welcomed. And you know that's not true when you get in there because you realize you may be welcome, but you're not wanted. We find those at family reunions. Everybody's welcome to come, but you don't want everybody to come. So, and sometimes you don't want to go. We do prejudge. That's what the word prejudice is. We prejudge somebody before we had a conversation. If it's a gay person and you're judging them, you never sat down with a same gender loving human being and had a meaningful conversation, you're going to prejudge them. An atheist, an agnostic, a Catholic, a Protestant, a Jew, a Muslim, when you have one-on-one conversations or permit and allow yourself to do that, you find something out that you would not have found out. And you can relate to them and you have empathy, compassion, not just sympathy because they're going to or through hell.
It's a great lesson, and it's one that I heard from the Hasidic tradition in my own Jewish faith. There is a story about a disciple who says to his rabbi, "Rabbi, I love you. I love you so much." And the rabbi says to him, "Do you know what hurts me?" And the student says, "I told you I loved you. Why are you asking me if I know what hurts you?" And the rabbi answered, "Because if you don't know what hurts me, you can't say you love me."
Wow.
It's a great lesson.
I love that.
So the origin of your separation from your Pentecostalism was your decision that God had revealed to you that there really is no such place as hell. And hell holds a central place in the theology of Pentecostals. As a Jew, I did not grow up with a sense of this foreboding of some hell awaiting me. And I think that's probably the case for a lot of people who are not in that kind of religious ethos. Can you describe to me, to our listeners who are not current or former hell believers, what it meant psychologically to you and to the people around you to affirm that there was no such place as eternal damnation?
Well, it really initiates from the universal law of sowing and reaping. As long as the earth remains sowing, there'll be seed, harvest and sowing. And so, or karma, what goes around comes around, and as you would that men do unto you, do you also unto the golden rule. So we just extended that to actually being God and could not conceive God or good without devil or evil. We were dualist, and so we are pronounced dualism. And hell is the anchor, not love. Hell is the anchor that kept us holy. The Bible says, follow peace with all men and holiness without which no man shall see the Lord. Or God says, be thou holy as I am holy. Well, we know we're never going to be as holy as God. And we go through all kinds of rituals and moral standards and rites and libations and baptisms to try to make ourselves measure up to the quote-unquote holiness of a holy God. So the fear that we won't measure up is always theirs. Ours was emphasized more by hell. And the main thing for Christians is, if you don't have hell, then you don't need a savior, which demeans and diminishes Jesus. And that's the main offense that the people have toward me. This guy doesn't believe in hell. That means he doesn't believe in redemption. He doesn't believe in Jesus. He doesn't believe in the cross, Calvary, the blood, atonement. So it goes a long, long way, and it's a big slap in the face of several thousand years of entrenched indoctrination. Holiness, people don't believe in holiness without hell.
Thank you. That is very helpful. I want to ask you one last question before we let you go, and it has to do with the great value that we have in including you as a leader in Interfaith Alliance, Bishop. We so often position ourselves in opposition to policies and legislation that tends to make us angry about what people on various extremes are trying to do to religion in the United States. But we also hold as a basic principle the healing power of faith in our world. What is the healing power of religion that we need to tap into, particularly in the world we're living in right now?
Religion gives people hope, even if it's for some a fake or false or a feeble hope. Without hope, we're given to ultimate despair. In my opinion, the number one positive contribution of any religion is that it gives its adherents some sense of happy anticipation of good or happy anticipation of God. Without hope, we are completely consumed with despair and desperation and fear, which leads to reactions. It's an alarm, or is a call to arms. And when you get alarmed, you call to arms. And when the bell goes off, everybody grabs their armor and or their arms, and they're ready to fight. So religion is supposed to calm the alarm and just keep us alert. Some do that better than others. A sense of awareness or alertness, then it's like we're in dark, we don't know, we're vulnerable, we're intimidated. You know, lions and tigers and bears, oh my, the Wizard of Oz. Religion yep. is a, again, I say a little bit of a false hope, but it's a strong hope for those who feel like they need it.
Bishop Carlton Pearson, I want to thank you for taking this time with us. I want to encourage everybody who's listening not only to see Come Sunday on Netflix, but after you've finished listening to State of Belief, to switch over to This American Life, where they are replaying the episode called Heretic, which began this process for publicizing and expanding the message of the extraordinary story of Bishop Carlton Pearson. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure, Rabbi. Thank you so much. You're a kind man. I respect you. I love your heart. I love your integrity. I love your passion for good. Glad to be associated.
I hope that all makes it onto the show.
It better.
Thanks.
My thanks to Interfaith Alliance President and State of Belief Radio Special Correspondent Jack Moline for that interview with Alliance Board Member Bishop Carlton Pearson. The film telling his story, titled Come Sunday, is available on Netflix. Over the past years, if there was an issue that was hurting people, it was hard to keep activist and organizer Donald Red Wing from getting involved. Astute, articulate, and empathetic, Donna spent time at Interfaith Alliance. She led national and state-level human rights organizations, but never lost sight of the individual lives impacted by the work she so deeply devoted herself to. It was cancer that cruelly took Donna from us this past week. And even as I continue to process the reality of that loss, I want to celebrate her work and her spirit here with you. Donna Redwing was a controversial figure who demanded change and progress and inclusivity. But she had the remarkable gift of being able to sit with people she disagreed with vehemently, to see their humanity, and to show the respect that she demanded in return. We talked about that a few years ago right here on State of Belief, and I want to share an excerpt of that conversation with you today.
You were called the most dangerous woman in America. I know you're proud of that. I'm proud of you for them calling you that. Tell our listeners how that label came about.
Sure. There was a wonderful writer. His name was Rob Borsellini, and he covered a lot of the political and cultural things that went on in Iowa, especially during caucus season. And he was doing a piece on LGBT persons working on presidential campaigns. And this was back in the early 2000s, and I was Howard Dean's liaison to the LGBT community. And so he kind of honed in on me and made some phone calls. And when he called, I believe he called someone at the Christian Coalition, that's what they said about me. And as he dug a little deeper, though, it wasn't because I'm a mean, nasty, awful person. What he heard was that I was dangerous because people liked me. One of the people said if I were their neighbor, they would, they know that I would, you know, feed their dog and make sure their plants got watered. I was that kind of a person, and that's what made me dangerous. And I think there's a real lesson there. You know, when the faces and voices and stories of LGBT people get seen and heard, and we're your neighbor and your friend and your daughter, and the person you like most at work, that's really dangerous to them in the culture war, because how can they then work against us?
Mm-hmm. What drew you to become involved in the Alliance enough to want to work in that agency?
Well, first of all, I hope your listeners know that anyone who meets and connects with the Reverend C. Welton Gaddy would want to work at the Interfaith Alliance. That's just a given. So that's there. To work with you was such an honor and privilege. I also, when I came to Interfaith Alliance, that was after, almost 20 years
right.
in the LGBT movement. And some of those years were pretty rough and tumble. You know, some of those years I was less of an advocate and more of an agitator.
Mm-hmm.
And so my introduction to Interfaith Alliance, it began to teach me another way of doing things. And the whole concept of civility and civil dialogue, the idea that we can meet people where they are, that we can disagree without being disagreeable. I think you'll remember the time Martin Marty had his live public radio conversation, mm-hmm. and it was LGBT advocates and those who worked against us. It was pro-life and pro-choice people. It's through the Interfaith Alliance, and it's through working with people like you and connecting with folks like Martin Marty and even people like Bill Moyer that taught me that there's a different way that we can do business, and it's much, for me, much more effective. Mm-hmm. I'm most known in Iowa because I have very public civil dialogue with those who work against us. And in this country, in this time, I think people are so hungry for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I credit the Interfaith Alliance with, I think, my maturation as a much kinder, more civil human being. Demetra, my wife, you married us. Demetra was recently arrested with the Standing Rock protests.
Mm.
It was a righteous arrest, of course, mm-hmm. but I have to tell you, after spending a day in jail, when she left, all of the police officers came to see her and hug her and kiss her goodbye.
My goodness.
So that's the kind of, I guess, activism that I embrace.
Absolutely.
The last time Donna Redwing was with me on State of Belief Radio, we were talking about her retirement from leading One Iowa, the largest LGBTQ organization in that state. That was in 2016. And it was an opportunity for Donna to look back at her career.
What I love about working with a statewide organization is every day every day we're on the ground. Every day something happens and we know that somebody's life is better or someone's life was saved because of the work we do. It's so personal. It's so real. For me, the greatest satisfaction of working locally is that you know the people you're working with, you interact with them, and you know what happens. Mm-hmm. If you do A, B, and C, you find out, you know, the D, E, and F.
Donna, what advice can you offer to especially young activists out there right now at this particular time when they probably are feeling like the setbacks have been so heavy in a number of areas and would have the probably the leaning to say, I just need to give up?
You know, if you give up, you lose. I think it's that simple. I've been doing this work in the LGBT community for 30 years, in the larger social justice movement for many more. We need to engage. We've been through this before. You know, I work with young people who have never lived in a world where their rights could be taken away, you know, mm-hmm. who've never lived in a world where because they were gay, they were illegal or immoral or mentally ill. We've been there before. We're going to get through this. It's not going to be easy. But what we have to do, and whether it's a young LGBT activist or an environmental activist or a religious liberty activist, we have to engage. If we don't, then we are ceding the game to our opponents, and I'm not willing to do that. If this old woman can get out there and do the work, I really hope that the young folks who were so inspired, you know, by Bernie Sanders, were so inspired by parts of the campaigns, they need to keep at it. They need to keep at it.
This past Monday, Donna Redwing took her last breaths after a courageous battle with cancer. The LGBTQ community lost an advocate like no other. Interfaith Alliance lost a devoted former staff member and unwavering supporter. America lost a passionate advocate for justice and peace. I lost a longtime, tireless colleague and cherished friend. Donna served as chief of staff while I was leading Interfaith Alliance. I had the pleasure of handing to Donna the Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Award at the very first of these ceremonies. She was as compassionate as she was courageous, as smart as she was visionary. In 2013, I had the pleasure of performing the marriage ceremony for Donna and her wife, Sumitra. After they had shared life together for nearly 30 years, as we mourn the loss of Donna Redwing, my heart breaks for Sumitra, son Julian, grandson Jasper, and twin brother David. Not long ago, I talked with Donna about the speech she gave during the Women's March on the day after Donald Trump's inauguration. Tears filled my eyes as I went over her words. I told her that I thought she may have delivered the best advocacy speech that I have ever heard. Donna was humble, as usual, as she thanked me for the comment. And then she told me a little about the strong feelings she had as she stepped up to a microphone that day. I felt it was like she was saying to herself, "This is a moment I have waited for all of my life." This was her life. Without question, I am certain that Donna Redwing would like nothing more than to be remembered by the words she spoke that day. Donna Redwing, she helped set people free and find dignity and courage
there really was no one like her. Donna deserves peace. With great gratitude for her life and grief in the face of her death, I say to Donna, I love you. Rest well. There is no better way to end this remembrance than with the words Donna Redwing spoke in front of those 26,000 people gathered at the State House in Iowa for the women's protest and march on January 21, 2017.
Hi, my name is Donna Redwing. I speak as a lesbian, and I speak as an old woman. So that makes me gay and gray, and that is a dangerous combination. I am an activist, an advocate, and an agitator. There was a time in my lifetime, and as I look around some of your lifetimes, if the AARP sent you something in the mail, you know what I'm talking about. There was a time in my lifetime where, when we as gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer people, when who we were and who we got to be was illegal in most states, and we were deemed immoral in almost every faith tradition, there was a time when people like us were classified as having a mental disorder, when as long as folks with AIDS, HIV, when that only impacted Haitians and IV drug users and gays, our government's response was genocidal. And we buried our friends. We buried our friends. And HIV was criminalized in panic-driven law. There was a time when we were considered sick, deprived, depraved, wrong, abnormal, and incarceration, lobotomy, shock therapy, reparative therapy, that was used to cure the sickness that was us. When our humanity was diminished by ignorance and hate and bias, when we were not allowed to openly serve in the military, when we could lose our jobs just because of who we loved, when our families and relationships were not accorded the rights and responsibilities that everyone else enjoyed, there was a time. But times changed, things changed. And we were the change. We marched and we voted and we protested. We organized, we kicked open closet doors. We came out in unbelievable numbers. We put a face and a story to who we were. That change was forged in the crucible of a movement that took extraordinary coverage. It took courage, it took tenacity, it took everything we had. From the streets to corporate America, from our houses of worship, our neighborhood, our schools, our family, our government, we demanded equality, nothing more, and certainly nothing less. We were the change. And so today it is with great hope for our beloved community that I offer a call to action, and it is this. Today we stand as one community. We will not go back to the way things were. Our message to our policymakers and lawmakers is this: we are watching you. We will be vigilant. We will not ignore any challenge to equality or to freedom or to human and civil rights. We will not allow women and girls to be treated as second-class citizens. Never again. Women will not be treated as second-class citizens. We will not allow bigoted and bullying legislation to see the light of day without a fight that they will not believe. We will not go back to the way things used to be, because we are the change. We are the future. Yesterday morning, my wife asked me to say this today, and she's my wife, so I have to say it. She said, "Your heart knows the way, so walk in that direction." Let's do that. Let's walk in the direction of our hearts. Let's be kind to one another, but let us fight like hell. In this culture war, because that's what this is, in this culture war, know that each one of us is here today. Each one of you is here today because you were born to be in this movement. We have everything we need to fight for freedom and justice, and we have every right to do so. So fight. Fight. Organize. Educate. Agitate. You have the power. We have the power. Together, united, we cannot be defeated. Love is love is love is love. And love trumps everything. Love trumps everything. Love trumps everything.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you think there's value in the conversations we present and the voices we amplify in the midst of the gridlock our public rhetoric too often becomes, please, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us for next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.